Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and I'm here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Connect the Dots has been running here on Progressive Radio for over 7 years, and each week on the show, we connect the dots between our individual well-being and the well-being of our communities, our air, water, earth, and food, our society, our healthcare system, as well as the overall ecological balance of planet Earth. And each week on the show, we discuss different facets of all of the things in our complex social order, belief systems, and biological and ecological world that impact us to kind of get a grasp at on making the right decisions as citizens and as a society as to what we want to advance and what we want to limit or end. So each week on the show, we discuss that with different authors, advocates, experts, scientists, thought leaders, and we also talk about current issues that kind of fall within our realm. And as regular listeners will know, and new listeners can discover through going into the Connect the Dots Podbean archives, we've made a regular theme of election integrity over the past year when concerns have come to the surface, as well as free speech, the role of the media, and all that we really need to create a sustainable democracy. That's why I'm really delighted on today's show to welcome John Bonifaz. He's the co-founder and president of an organization called Free Speech for People. That sounds good. We need that. Now more than ever. Yeah, exactly. You have an excellent, admirable background in national voting rights as a counsel for the National Voting Rights Institute, an organization he farsightedly founded as far back as 1994. With concerns coming to the fore about voting rights, voting access, the integrity of vote, very much coming to the fore in many people's minds. Although, unfortunately, in many different ways, not always, in accord or integration over the past year. I want to note also that John is a cum laude graduate of Harvard Law School and a 1999 recipient of a MacArthur Foundation Fellowship. So we're really lucky to have such a smart and dedicated person working on this important issue. Welcome to Connect the Dots, John Bonifaz.
Thank you, Allison. Thank you for that kind introduction. I'm pleased to be with you.
Basically, I have met you. I've known of your work. I've encountered you in various different venues and conferences and important moments of our rapidly evolving contemporary history. But what really kind of grabbed me to invite you on the show is a current happening of this past week that is yet another example of, kind of an alarm being sounded about the integrity of our election systems, possible tampering from, various different directions. So I really felt that from what I could see among my internet followers and people I know, there's just been a very active and somewhat confused conversation in the wake of a release in the last day of a top-secret NSA report, that's the National Security Agency, detailing potential Russian hacking efforts days before the 2016 election. And the big surprise, both the leak and more around it that we'll be discussing on today's program, is the fact that this leak was published by The Intercept, a well-known and highly regarded progressive outlet helmed by Glenn Greenwald, a journalist, highly regarded journalist on the progressive left. And now there's a kind of furious debate and confusion because all along there have been various accusations or concerns about hacking or lack of election integrity with finger pointing in various directions, but seemingly a a sort of Tower of Babel of confusion where different segments of our society are looking at different instances of election integrity, so that there's a lot of heat around one segment in one group and another segment in another group, and not a lot of light or communication between the groups at about the overall problem. And so that's why I'm really delighted to have you on Connect the Dots today to help clarify the overall context and quite confusing history of questions about election integrity. So first off, you know, maybe you'd like to define for our listeners, what do we mean by election integrity? Why is that a high value, and why is it a big problem if we don't have it? Seems obvious,
well,
but maybe people don't even know the term.
Sure.
You know?
I mean, I think when we talk about election integrity, primarily what that means is the integrity of the election itself, and that goes to the vote counting process, but also the ability for people to access the ballot. Certainly, the broader voting rights concerns around our elections also come into play. So when we have voter ID laws where there's suppression of the vote, that's an election integrity concern, but it's often framed more as a voting rights question. Frankly, I think they're all the same cloth, and we should define election integrity as a voting rights issue as well. But as far as, you know, the focus in terms of this question right now of what happened potentially with hacking prior to the election, it is a question that is resurfacing as to whether the tallying of the votes, as was reported on election night, can be seen as verifiable. And that continues to be a challenge in this country when we do not audit our elections, when we never look at the paper records for the 75% of the electorate that has paper records for casting the votes. We never look at those records. And therefore, you know, we're really left to believe that the machines that have reported the tallies are reliable, trustworthy, have not been hacked, and we move on. We just don't even do a basic audit. It's quite incredible when we consider that nearly every other major institution in the country, from banking to air traffic control to mass transportation in general, we do cross-checks. We do auditing all the time. You don't go and deposit your money in a bank and expect that you never get any kind of proof that you deposited it, or that the bank itself won't double check and make sure that it's there. Or frankly, when you use a credit card and you get alerted that there seems to be some fraudulent charges on your card. I mean, these companies are constantly auditing their own systems. But we don't do that with elections. We just have these machines count our votes, and we get the reports on election night in a very fast-paced environment, and then we're told to move on. And we never look at the paper ballots and the paper records.
Mm-hmm. You know, in the last year, and even more than a year, the last 14 or 15 months, in both the Democratic primary leading up to this election, as well as in this election itself, there have been concerns about tampering with the results, as well as, you know, denying voters the right to vote. I mean, we've had three different, or really four different things described, and it's all rather confusing. There's been accusations of voter fraud on the Republican side, meaning that people voted in multiple places, as Greg Powell, and, you know, voted over and over, and therefore influenced the outcome. Greg Palast, in his recent film, has kind of put a kibosh on that and really documented how the opposite, which is denying people the right to vote through striking them from the rolls or making the polling places inaccessible or undermanned or, you know, in various ways, you know, discarding people from the voter rolls who should have been able to vote. He's documented that problem, which is, you know, a kind of voter access issue. Then we've also had accusations of, you know, similar people being struck off the rolls in the Democratic primary, people who were supposed to, you know, longstanding Democrats who were characterized as independents and unable to vote, lost votes, vote counting issues. You know, that would fall under not a voter fraud perpetrated by the voters, as is alleged by the Republicans, but election fraud. In other words, the outcome has been tampered with through some manipulation of the machines. Finally, we've had also the accusations of that the Russians, and specifically Vladimir Putin, had hacked the elections. To the ear of somebody like myself who's aware of election integrity, that sounds like, that has sounded all along like that meant that there was an actual manipulation of the vote count and outcome, where it really has been meant as hacking emails influenced voters, which is not really, I mean, I wouldn't call that election integrity so much as, you know, media output, or, I mean, what would you call that? But you know, all along it's been said that they hacked the election by having hacked the emails of the Democratic National Committee or the Clinton campaign. I mean, and now we finally, this week, have, you know, this new report which alleges that the National Security Administration believes that there could have been actual hacking of the election outcome.
Well, to be clear, I mean, what they say yeah. in the report is mm-hmm. that they apparently, you know, have found in this top secret document that wasn't supposed to see the light of day, or who knows when it would, if at all, but that document identifies the hacking that allegedly occurred of the VR Systems Company, which operates in a number of states in determining who gets access to the ballot via voter registration systems. So these are electronic poll books and other kinds of systems this company provides. They are wired to the vote tabulating machines often. And so the concern here that's been raised in that report is that, in fact, it could, you know, potentially have led to tampering with the vote tallying process. Many commentators and news reporters, when they focused on this report, have said there's no proof, there's no indication whatsoever that the NSA believes that the vote tallying process was tampered with. And that may be true, but I think that the inverse is also true, that there's no indication or proof that the hacking did not lead to that. And the reason why we don't know whether or not this occurred, and we can't say definitively whether or not it occurred one way or the other, is because we never audited the process. And when the recounts went forward in three states, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, they were effectively blocked from a full hand counting of the paper ballots where those paper ballots existed, and a forensic examination of the electronic voting systems in Pennsylvania where those existed. So this is why, you know, I think we're needing to break through all the, you know, frankly, cloudy discussion, foggy discussion that happens when we talk about election integrity, and you know, get to the bottom line, which is the reason why many people question the outcome. They question whether or not there was fraudulent activity. They question whether votes were properly recounted. The reason why those fears persist is because we never verify our elections. And in a democracy, if we're going to have a true process that is, you know, fair to all, that and upholds the right to vote for all, we must verify our elections. So, I don't want to go so far as saying the NSA says X, because we don't, they don't make those conclusions. But what is wrong is for many of the commentators so far to go out and say the NSA doesn't have any proof the vote tallying was impacted, therefore the vote tallying wasn't impacted. That therefore doesn't exist. And you know, we have to remember that in January of this year, the intelligence community, prior to Donald Trump taking office, put out an assessment under President Obama that was requested by the president, the former president, and that intelligence assessment had language in it which said there was no evidence that the actual vote tallying was impacted in any way. They focused solely on the hacking of the emails. Now we come to learn that a report from the NSA in early May indicates that they were very close to the process of the vote tabulation. Days before, dealing with a company, maybe more than one, but at least that one, VR Systems, which had access to the vote tabulating machines itself via their voter registration systems. So if you've broken into the voter registration systems, you could theoretically get access to the vote tabulating systems as well.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just, as we're speaking, something just came up from WikiLeaks on Twitter, and they're saying, press reports today claiming NSA report shows vote machine hacking. False. Report claims attempts to phish voter registration outfits. Can you, you know, there's such confusion, even using the word hacking of emails, which has been said all throughout. You know, to me, hacking would imply hacking of the election equipment. But when you say hacking of emails, you know, you're basically saying somebody released some emails. And, you know, but instead of saying that, they're saying hacking. So I think at this point, people don't understand very well, you know, what kinds of hacking could be occurring, what phishing voter registration outfits is. I mean, can you explain that a little bit for our listeners?
My understanding from, again, reading about the report via The Intercept is that the NSA has concluded that the VR Systems company, they don't name it, but it's pretty possible to determine that that's the company, did experience a hack of its system, and that very well could be connected to vote tabulation systems. Now, that's not a conclusion they draw, but computer scientists like Alex Halderman at the University of Michigan have made that point in the Intercept article, that these systems are wired to the vote tabulation system. So it is true to say that the NSA report does not state in any way whatsoever that there was a hacking of voting machines as defined by where we cast our votes, either via paper ballot scanning through an optical scan system or electronic voting. But it is also not true to solely say this is about some phishing expedition where they just attempted. The NSA report says they actually succeeded in breaking through with respect to these systems. They tried in other states as well, and with 100-plus election officials, apparently they were out there fishing for others, and there's no clarity from that report as to how successful they may have been. But they did succeed with respect to the VR Systems company itself. And we know, for example, that on Election Day in Durham, North Carolina, the e-poll books broke down. These are electronic poll books where you are essentially required to go through first and check in. And that's, you know, other than other places where you have a paper-based system where you give your name out and they find your name in the system on the books there. Here it's an electronic system. It's called electronic poll books. People were standing in line in Durham for long periods of time because those e-poll books broke down. Those e-poll books, that's a machine, right? It's an actual electronic equipment. Those are serviced by VR Systems, this Florida-based company that was hacked, allegedly, by the Russian government, according to the NSA. So, you know, you have in the Intercept article North Carolina officials stating that actually it didn't ultimately, get impacted by any hacking. It was a problem, you know, with the calibration of the machines. You know, that's their allegation. That may be true. But we never again looked into what happened there. We just know there were long lines. The e-poll books broke down. People were turned away because of those long lines. They couldn't wait And, you know, some voters were disenfranchised as a result. But the larger question needs to be asked, were those electronic poll books breaking down because of a hack? And that question is among many that needs further investigation now. I think what's happening here in terms of the broader discussion is a rush to want to say definitively there's no evidence that the vote tallying was impacted. There may be no evidence yet, but there's no evidence that it was not. And the fact is that until we actually go about, looking at the ballot, I mean, it is true that most of these jurisdictions, if not all, must keep these ballots for a certain period of time under federal law. And, you know, we would do well to go back and do that kind of audit that we never had and to actually examine whether the ballots, where there are those ballots present, match up to the machine results. Now, this isn't 100% hand counting that's required. This can be done with sampling of ballots. You do a random 3% sampling. You figure out whether that's matching the tally, and if it's not, you keep counting. But what is always surprising to me in the election integrity field is how quickly election officials and those who frankly don't know what they're talking about will quickly jump to the conclusion that these are tinfoil hat people, these are people who just, you know, scream stolen or fraud. They don't know what they're saying. Well, you know, I'm not discounting that there are people out there who want to yell that it was fraudulent or stolen before knowing the facts. I get that. But I also think they can't be so sure on their end that votes were properly counted when we never verify the process. And the last thing I'll just say on this point is President Obama was asked in December at what was to be his final press conference. I believe he ended up holding another one after that, but it was billed as his final press conference from the White House. And in the midst of all these allegations around the hacking of the emails and concerns about what had happened on Election Day, a reporter asked him, "Can you assure the American people that we had a free and fair election?" And he paused and he said, "I can assure the American people that everyone's vote was properly counted." And I watched that live, and I just could not believe that this president, who is very knowledgeable about constitutional law and voting rights, could make that assurance. He does not have any capacity to make that statement when we don't verify our elections, when we don't audit the process. He has no way of knowing whether or not everyone's vote was properly counted.
That's so. In other words, we're receiving reassurances, and then we're kind of outraged at any revelation that maybe things are not quite right. But then we persist in not getting a handle on doing anything about this. Here we have a government, highly problematic. The current administration posing many threats to the environment, to democracy, to the health of the people. In your own organization, Free Speech for People, you have an initiative looking into impeachment. You have an initiative looking into defending the Constitution, which is being undermined. And yet, we don't want to look at this. Is it impossible to look at it? Is it, you're speaking, you're saying that the records are there, but we're choosing not to look at it. What are the obstacles to looking at it, and how easy could it be to look at it if we, had the right approach to it?
Well, I mean, it would be a very labor-intensive process, right, to go into every state to try to do this audit from a private perspective. It would likely require litigation. There would be resistance from election officials. But if we had a culture in this country where we understood that we needed to verify the process, election officials themselves could do the audits, and they would go back, again, where there are paper ballots. Those jurisdictions that have electronic voting machines are extremely unreliable in terms of being able to state with accuracy that votes were properly counted, because there's no paper trail for the most part. And even if there are receipts that come out of those machines, they don't really reflect voter intent, because most people don't look at those receipts after they cast their votes on those machines. That being said, 75% of the electors, as I said, has some form of paper ballots or paper records, and we ought to at least be looking at those. And that's something that can be done from, again, random sampling for election officials to do. You know, we could target specific jurisdictions. We could say that, you know, we're concerned about what may have happened in XYZ state, and therefore we're going to focus first on that. You know, the Jill Stein campaign, when Hillary Clinton was not willing to seek the recounts, they came forward. They raised the necessary funds online. I advised that campaign and helped initiate, you know, the effort in reaching out to the Stein campaign after we were unsuccessful in convincing the Clinton campaign to do these recounts. But they were ultimately blocked. And they were blocked both by recalcitrant election officials who didn't want to do hand counting in certain jurisdictions in Wisconsin, or by, in Michigan's case, the courts, a partisan court that went the way of the Trump campaign and the Republican Party to block the hand counting there. So, you know, what will likely happen if you see this kind of effort move forward is there will be yet again litigation and efforts to block it. And, you know, I think we have to ask ourselves, what's the fear? Why are people scared of an audit of the election process? What do they actually fear? And in the case of Michigan, we know there was a 10,000 vote margin between the two candidates, Trump and Clinton, and a hand counting of the votes threatened to erase that margin or come very close to erasing it. And the Trump campaign and the Republican Party didn't want to have anything to do with that. They didn't want that to happen anyway. So they put all their resources to blocking it, and they succeeded in getting a partisan court, you know, dominated by Republicans in the Michigan court system to effectively stop that recount. So, you know, in the ideal world, we wouldn't have those kinds of partisan decisions. We would recognize this as part of the nonpartisan work of verifying our elections, and we would do it automatically every election cycle.
Well, you know, part of the problem has been that there has been such intense partisanship around the mounting awareness that we have a major election integrity process. So it isn't nonpartisan. In fact, it's quite partisan. You know, so when there were tremendous worrisome irregularities, you know, in, for example, California, people stricken from the rolls, huge delays in vote counts and recounts and all kinds of allegations of irregularities. You know, it's like that, you know, the thing didn't hit, and many people on, you know, the progressive left are concerned about that and relive that moment because there wasn't any possibility of hitting a pause button and saying, you know, wait a minute. It was like, you know, the convention center is booked, the TV stations have, you know, blocked out that time and made their travel plans, and, you know, we're just rolling forward even with this kind of question about the vote and the nomination as if the mechanics of getting to a vote is unimportant. You know, if the outcome were to have been different, that's unimportant. We just kind of have a schedule, and we're rolling forward and dealing with it. So that was like a big wake-up call for the progressives. Later, with the actual election, suddenly more moderate and mainstream liberals and Democrats are kind of joining, you know, the hurrah, saying this election, you know, we need a recount. This election had undue influence from, you know, the revelation of these emails, possibly obtained by hacking, although the WikiLeaks, which released those emails, denied that, you know, that it was hacking, and you know, and then the hacking was attributed to the Russians. So, in fact, this whole issue is completely obscured by partisanship. And then, when the recount is set about, then you have, you know, you have parties. Officials and courts blocking the recount. So, in fact, this has become a highly partisan issue, and there doesn't seem to be a way to kind of clear the debris around this to get to anything nonpartisan. And even this week with the NSA revelations, which were revealed in an article by The Intercept, that caused a lot of confusion because of these partisan lines. I mean, my position was, you know, if there was not enough evidence, despite the allegations, there was no evidence that was really brought forward of Russian hacking of emails, you know, the DNC in the, you know, the election season. If there was no evidence, then, you know, people on the left developed a kind of reflexive thing of, you know, blaming it all on the Russians, you know. So now when this revelation comes forward that perhaps there was security breaches, you know, with the Russians entering into it, people want to dismiss that out of hand. And yet, shockingly, this report was, you know, released and reported on by The Intercept, which had been questioning the lack of evidence of Russian influence all along. You know, my view is, and there are doubts and sort of areas where this report is not substantiated and there is not really a clear smoking gun, but if there were, then we have to look at it. We can't just, you know, kind of say, no, it didn't happen, because it's more of these accusations about the Russians. On, you know, on the other side, anything that, you know, like people are puzzled about why The Intercept would be releasing this document. I mean, do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, I think this was an indication that The Intercept was ready to see a news story that was right before them and not give it up to some other news outlet, right? I mean, they were the ones who apparently mm-hmm. received this anonymously, received this secret report. And, you know, presumably they saw the news value of it and they were ready to report it. You know, I understand the view that we can't fully trust the intelligence community. I was part of the effort on the eve of the Iraq war to challenge that war in court. I served as lead counsel on behalf of soldiers and parents of soldiers, challenging then President George W. Bush's authority as well as Donald Rumsfeld's authority to take us into an unlawful and unconstitutional war based on false claims that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, that we needed to do this. So I fully understand the concern that we can't put all of our, you know, weight into what the intelligence community tells us, because maybe, you know, maybe they're wrong. That being said, we also can't be blinded, you know, fully by that view and not be willing to question when these kinds of allegations are put before us. And I think The Intercept is to be given some credit for having shifted from their position that, you know, we have to doubt what the intelligence community is saying, to willingly to report this secret document once they got a hold of it.
Mm-hmm. What are the caveats that, you know, in the secret document that lead us to still have, you know, some doubts or questions about the full implication of this? In other words, this document doesn't take us all the way to this absolutely happened.
Right. I mean,
so where are there
again,
indicators
there no
that it
proof.
Happened? And,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, there is no proof that it impacted, according to this document, that it impacted the vote tallying process, but it raises additional questions which now need to be answered as to whether it could have. And, you know, before reporters and producers jump to the conclusion that, oh, we're still in the clear that the vote itself was accurate and didn't get impacted, before they jump to that, we need to answer those questions. And that requires a fair amount of investigation, as I said, and going back and actually trying to verify the process. We have to remember that after the Bush v. Gore fiasco, where, of course, we went into weeks of not knowing who had won the presidential election between George W. Bush and Al Gore, and we had a series of cases, one of which ultimately went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court, for the first time in our nation's history, stopped the vote counting to declare who would be president. Mm-hmm. After all that was over, there was an effort to actually go back and determine who really won Florida. And that effort resulted in a finding that Al Gore had won, right? There were ballots that were examined. And what was remarkable about that is that once that story came out, it was very much buried. It was almost like it was too explosive for the country to take, that we would, you know, months after this president assumes office, that we would find that he wasn't legitimately the president. I think the only thing that George W. Bush had, you know, in that scenario was to be able to say, well, the Supreme Court decided that I was to be president and decided the vote counting was to be stopped, and therefore the transfer of power was complete. But I think what sometimes happens in this country is, you know, the elites decide that certain information is too dangerous for us to have as a country. And it's too dangerous for the people to learn that actually the person in the White House, in that case, really didn't necessarily even win Florida. And in this case, it may be too dangerous for the public to, you know, find out that the hacking of our democracy writ large in terms of the email system and now the voter registration systems might have reached to the actual vote tallying process. And there seems to be a rush to want to say, no, that didn't get impacted. And I think that aspect of our culture is very much one in which we somehow think we have to have this transfer of power in an orderly fashion every 4 years, and we can't have this growing, you know, legitimacy question and doubt that undermines stability in the United States, undermines probably for those who are, you know, in the elites, the stock market, all these other things. And so therefore, you know, we're just not allowed to find that out. The questions won't be asked. We're going to quickly rush to say, well, that didn't impact the actual accuracy. But what's happening now is I don't think actually that that's going to end the questioning. I do think people will keep asking, and there will probably be more revelations. And, you know, we will be in this period of instability, frankly, until we address the question, ultimate underlying question here of whether or not the person who sits in the Oval Office today is legitimately elected. And now the newer questions of whether he is fit for the office under the Constitution, given the behavior he's engaged in since taking the oath of office, and whether, in fact, he's committed impeachable offenses.
Right. That's that's obviously an entirely separate issue, you know, although one that many are keenly interested in because of his decisions, and which others think are, you know, is a partisan attack on a legitimately elected president, right? But, you know, I have a question, too, which is, how does our need in this country to kind of lock down the result, as you mentioned, for the stock market or for other, you know, concerns, contrast with other countries, you know, where there are different systems,
yeah,
where if there's uncertainty, there's more flexibility or give. It's not like the end,
yeah,
of the world. They have a design that permits that. Could you, like, let our viewers know a little bit about, you know, why this is, it's not like, why our system is unusually rigid in this regard?
Well, I don't think there's any rational reason why it is. It is true that other countries don't seem to have this rush to know the results. In Canada, they hand count the paper ballots entirely. They involve, you know, local citizens all across the country who take part in volunteering to hand count the ballots. And it takes, you know, longer than it does, you know, to learn it right away that night. But it ultimately gets done in an orderly fashion, and people trust the results. In Denmark, you had, you know, the announcement just after this election in the United States, based on what had happened, that they were going to engage in hand counting the ballots to ensure the accuracy of the election. So it was a direct result of learning what had happened in the United States, that they were no longer going to just rely on machines. And, you know, those are ways in which we can engage in verifying the election. But I want to be clear, I appreciate the way Canada does it. I don't think we have to do what Canada does. I think it's actually very healthy to do it that way. But I think we could, at a very minimum, do random sampling. So we're not hand counting 100%, but we're doing a random sampling of the ballots where those ballots exist. We're eventually doing away with electronic voting machines because those systems aren't reliable in any way whatsoever, and there's no paper ballots. And we do that random sampling, and we determine whether or not there's some questions that need to be further investigated. And if there are, we keep counting those ballots. But, you know, there is no rational basis for why in this country we don't verify the results in any way whatsoever. It doesn't make any sense. And it's quite striking in a election like this one, where you had all these questions around foreign interference, that we weren't going to do it. If there was ever an election to verify, it was the 2016 presidential election.
Is this a partisan issue? Is there one side of the political spectrum that doesn't want anything to do with, does it just have to do with whose candidate most recently won? That, you know, we want to shut the door if our candidate won. A few days before the release of this NSA report, Glenn Greenwald did a podcast with David Sirota, which was about, you know, leaks are leaks and, you know, respect leaks and whistleblowers, even if your political issue, your political candidate is not helped by a leak. You know, that comes
yeah,
to light.
No,
it was almost like they were trying
point.
To lay the ground.
Yeah, I do think that there is a community that engages in election integrity work that's strictly nonpartisan. And I certainly view myself as in that community. We're at Free Speech Review, we're a nonpartisan organization. I actually think the impeachment campaign that we've been helping to lead is strictly nonpartisan as well. This is about our Constitution, our democracy. But there's no question that the victor, whoever that may be, whether it's Democrat or Republican or Independent, doesn't really often want a recount or an audit because they want to move on. And it's only the candidates with the strength of character to say, well, let's go ahead and verify these results and make sure they're right. Al Franken is a United States Senator today because there was a system in the state of Minnesota when he ran first, a number of years ago against Norm Coleman, in order to hand count the ballots. It was such a close election. They had an automatic recount, and they began to hand count the ballots. Norm Coleman was declared the winner on election night, and through the hand counting of the ballots, it was found that actually Al Franken had won. And he's the senator today because of that. So, that's just one example among many of why election integrity matters. It matters to ensure the accuracy of the process, and I think that's a nonpartisan issue. I don't think that's about Democrats or Republicans. I do think this particular president, with his outrageous and completely fiction-oriented claims of voter fraud, has made it into a partisan fight. He's brought up something that actually doesn't exist as a problem. I mean, there's been plenty of studies to demonstrate that actual impersonation of voters, which is a felony, you can go to jail for it, is extremely rare. And the number of cases that have been prosecuted by the U.S. Justice Department, you know, are less than 50, I believe. It's like 31 cases over the years. So this is really, you know, it's quite striking the way the debate gets shifted by this kind of false, narrative that the president is putting forward about voter fraud. And so now we're led to believe, well, some on one side think voter fraud, some on the other side think election integrity. I don't see it that way. Election integrity is a real concern. There's plenty of evidence for why it is a real concern. There's no evidence for voter fraud. It's not even a question, and plenty of experts have demonstrated that. So, you know, on the one hand we're dealing with falsehoods, and on the other hand we're dealing with actual facts and questions that have been raised. Now, I fully understand that there are some in the election integrity community who want to rush to say the election was stolen without having that proof, and I think that doesn't help the process either. But by and large, at least the ones I've interacted with over the years in terms of election integrity advocates, they see their work as nonpartisan. They go where the facts go, and they share the view that we should be having a verification process after every election, regardless of who the victor is.
How long, in your estimation and in the estimation of the election integrity community, have there been, you know, the potential for and possibly even tampering with past elections? In other words, is this just today, you know, for the first time that this shocking possibility is there, or is it something that likely has been going on for a while by different parties over many years?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, Allison, because actually it helps clarify what's at stake here, right? There's no question that our history throughout, you know, the past two-plus centuries has included, you know, vote stuffing of ballot boxes. We know that. There have been instances dating back many decades of that. And, of course, the Kennedy-Nixon race in 1960 had those charges. We are dealing with something entirely different today when we have election integrity concerns. And the reason why is this is not about, you know, a ballot box getting stuffed. I mean, we have moved dramatically into a different kind of system for most of the country. And it's very many systems, obviously, but the general way in which people vote is using electronic equipment. You know, there are a handful of jurisdictions where you go in there and you put your ballot in a box, and it's very quaint and like old times. But for the most part, there are electronic systems involved. And those systems break down along two lines. They're the systems in which you mark a ballot, a hand-marked ballot, you know, that you fill in the oval and you mark it of the candidates of your choice, and then you bring it over, you get checked out, and you bring it over to a machine called an optical scan machine, and you feed it through that scanner, and then you walk out. And you're led to believe your vote's been counted. And then the other system that exists, which is not as prevalent as it was right after the Florida debacle. We moved quickly to start bringing up these electronic voting systems. But that system is literally a touch screen. It's a computer, and there's no paper ballot. And you go in, and you mark your choices on a screen, and then you press done or finish, and you walk out, and you're led to believe your vote counted that way. Now, of these two systems, the one that's far more preferable is the first, right? The optical scan system, because at the end of the day, you still have a paper ballot that you can count in a recount or in an audit. It's only worth anything if you actually do that counting, if you do that audit or you do that recount. It's worthless if you just rely on the optical scan machine to tell you the results and you never actually count those ballots. And that is actually the way we work, you know, in elections for the most part. We don't actually ever look at those ballots. The electronic voting systems are completely unreliable because there's no way to actually do an audit or a recount. But both of these systems have been found to be hackable and open to benign problems as well as malfeasance, and that's exactly why we need to be engaged in looking at the ballots. So we've moved from a time when there were paper ballots, where stuffing of ballot boxes was the charge, and we've moved into a much larger scale, you know, concern of election integrity, where literally thousands of votes, if not tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of votes, could be miscounted or not counted at all based on these machines and their unreliability and their hackability. And that's why many people in this community have serious concerns about the trustworthiness of the tallies, is that we never look at those ballots. And we still use those machines in some jurisdictions that should have no place being used.
I mean, they're so hackable and so vulnerable.
The electronic voting system. So there's an upcoming special election, as we know, in Georgia, a runoff.
Mm-hmm.
And in that
yes.
congressional election, the systems mm-hmm. that are going to be used are electronic voting systems. They're touchscreen systems. And there's
mm-hmm.
actually a court case that's pending. They're going to federal court on June 7th to try to stop the use of those systems and to have paper ballots. And part of the reason why they're doing that is because there's already been concerns about hacking that occurred with respect to those systems prior to the start of the first round of that election. So, you know, that is one of many efforts that's gone on over the years to say that these systems should not be used. They really have proven to be completely unreliable, and they have no basis being used to count our votes. And yet that's the way in certain states people are forced to cast their votes, and there's no way of guaranteeing that their votes were properly counted. Pennsylvania, most of the jurisdictions in Pennsylvania use that kind of touchscreen system, and it's a real danger to the integrity of our elections.
Most areas of Pennsylvania use a touchscreen. That's really concerning because that's a very important swing state.
Yes.
So, you know, if you have a couple of swing states that have this kind of system, then
yeah.
essentially you have a very manipulable election outcome.
You do. You do. And you know, you talk to any computer scientist worth his or her grain of salt, they will tell you that these systems are unreliable, that they're hackable, and this is precisely why, you know, we need systems where there's a paper ballot that can be reviewed at the end of the process and not have something like Pennsylvania where they're paperless machines and you're entirely relying on the computer to have done it correctly. And,
well,
you know, these machines
really
break down for benign reasons, let alone malfeasance. So it's not just about hacking. It's about the fact they break down. And I was involved in a case in 2008 on the eve of the presidential election there in Pennsylvania where we were monitoring. I was working for an organization, Voter Action. I was its legal director at the time. And we were monitoring hotlines in Pennsylvania during the presidential primary. And we discovered in Philadelphia there were long lines being caused by these breakdowns, and people were being turned away because the machines were broken down. They couldn't stay in line. And so we went into court on the eve of the general election, and we won a court order. We presented the evidence. The hearing started at 2 o'clock. It went all the way till 9 p.m. at night. It was by no means with a very progressive judge. He was a conservative judge, but he said he was going to stay as long as is necessary to hear the evidence. And at the end of the hours of testimony that he heard, he ruled that all throughout Pennsylvania there needed to be emergency paper ballots provided when those machines broke down. Because, in fact, people should not be forced to turn away when the machines break down. So the machines are problematic not just because they're hackable, which is a huge concern, but because they do break down and they cause these long lines, and that will disenfranchise people as well. So for a variety of reasons, it makes no sense to continue to use them. The state of California did a top-to-bottom review of the use of those machines in their state a number of years ago in 2006 under then-Secretary of State Deborah Bowen. And they determined at the end of that top-to-bottom review, where they brought in computer scientists from all over the nation to review all their various systems, that they were going to effectively ban these direct recording electronic devices, DREs, the electronic voting systems, from use in California elections going forward. And they've banned it altogether, and other states have banned it altogether. But some states just hang on to these old systems, and they really have no place anymore being used.
Well, that is really, really alarming. I mean, we're coming to the end of our show here, but, you know, here we have a situation where everyone is, you know, working for candidates, or, you know, they're bombarding their elected officials with requests for action, and yet it all begins and ends with a vote if we can't guarantee the vote. So this is like a loophole, a big loophole in democracy that can be stretched to fit all kinds of distortions, and we can't really allow it. You know, I thank you for, you know, reorienting the listeners here and connect the dots to these issues, John Bonifaz. And I want to point our listeners to your organization, freespeechforpeople.org, free speech and a guaranteed vote. And, you know, thank you for orienting us and, you know, on this really crucial bottom line issue of election integrity.
Allison, thank you. I appreciate the time. It's been an honor to be with you.
All right. Thank you, listeners, too. You know, go check out, you can take action on John Bonifaz's website, freespeechforpeople.org, and you can also check the Connect the Dot archives. We regularly do cover election integrity because it's so incredibly foundational. That can be found at Connect the Dot's Podbeam online, and you can share it with friends, like it on iTunes, et cetera, et cetera. Thank you, everyone, for being with us today for another edition of Connect the Dots. We'll be back with you next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm Allison Rose Levy. Chin up, keep marching forward, and stand with all our relations.
Well, and there was me, and there was I.